Bandwidth for the iPhone LA podcast is provided by CacheFly at cacheFly.com. This is the iPhone LA podcast, episode 36 for March 2nd, 2009, The Return of Podcaster. This week's episode is sponsored by Audible. For your free audiobook, go to audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. So once again, we are here gathered around the virtual roundtable to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, and all that that encompasses. Tonight with me, of course, as always, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, as always, thanks for having me back. And you are such a glutton for punishment.
Yes. And Adam Christensen hopefully will be joining us. And if he does, we'll introduce him. And also here is Callie Lewis from Geek Brief. Hey, Callie.
Hey, glad to be here.
How are you doing?
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
I'm never around when you're recording.
Yeah, so we're really happy to have you back. Maybe we'll keep trying to have you on and keep the keep that working. I don't know.
Of course.
So that's great having you. And finally, we have a special guest, iPhone developer Alex Sukaransky of RSS Player / Podcaster fame. Hey, Alex, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Great having you. So you are here today to talk about your latest iPhone application, RSS Player. As most of you listening know, Podcaster was an application that was in the App Store a few months ago and was then removed because it was duplicating features, supposedly, in the iPhone. In iTunes, I guess, was the excuse. And then at some point, we got podcast downloading in the iTunes application. So since then, Alex has submitted a new application called RSS Player. And Alex, why don't you tell us about that?
Well, RSS Player is basically a podcast client, for the iPhone that does a couple of things differently than Apple's implementation that kind of makes it a lot easier to use for somebody that likes to listen to a lot of podcasts, like myself. I'm just glad that they accepted it into the store, basically. They changed their mind. First, they changed their mind about the farting apps, which got rejected right about the same time when Podcaster got rejected.
Right.
And so after they started accepting the farting apps, I decided to resubmit the Podcaster app.
It's a good time to do it. Then, what are they going to say to that? you say, well, you're not going to let me put in my podcasting app, but you're letting, the fart apps in there. I guess farting doesn't really duplicate, features in the iPhone. As far as I know, it doesn't do that automatically. So I guess they could argue that way. But so RSS Player, it's a podcatcher. And so the way you get the podcasts is, do you have a guide of podcasts that is pre-populated, or do you have to go find the URLs for the podcasts?
Well, originally when I submitted it, you did have to type in the URL for the feed. That was with version 1.0. That was like a month ago. But now with this most recent update, I built in a search right into it. And only because I seen other apps that built in the search, so I kind of felt safe to put it in. Originally I felt like they were going to reject it for that.
Right. So you submitted the application without the search in there, just to kind of test the water at that point.
Exactly.
Gotcha. And so now you can search through. Where does it get the list of podcasts from?
Well, I have my own podcast directory that I kind of just have a database of that, my crawlers have been picking up for a while. But besides the search, there's other ways you could import your feed. You could email yourself a link and import it so you don't have to type it. Several podcast websites have linked up their directories to RSS Player. So there's several ways of getting feeds into it.
Okay. Now, how does RSS Player differ from Apple's current implementation in the iTunes app?
Well, I'd say that the two biggest differences is that it could download any size file, which is kind of the biggest thing for me because I couldn't listen to pretty much any of the podcasts that I had on my list.
Okay, so it just downloads the largest file you can. So it'll do video and audio, right?
It does.
Okay. And it won't actually sync into the iPod app itself. But it doesn't do any sort of, does it subscribe as a subscription thing? So whenever you open the application, it'll say, oh, there's a new one, it'll grab it, or is that a setting?
It does. So there's a refresh button that will crawl all of the feeds and get new items, and then there's a separate sync button that will actually download new items and delete old items, depending on how you have it set.
Gotcha.
So it's pretty easy.
Now, is there any way to get the podcasts off of your phone back onto your computer, or is it just strictly for on the go, grabbing a podcast if it happens to be too large, like, you know, Callie's show, for example? If you happen to be out and about and you can't grab the Wi-Fi and you need to download Geek Brief. So it's just for that, really, not really for bringing it back to the computer, right?
It's not. I mean, the way that I use it, and I guess the way it was designed, because I designed it basically, you know, as myself, as like number one user, is I like to get up in the morning, I hit the refresh button, and it downloads them all when I'm getting ready, and that way I'm set for the day with all my podcasts. And then after work, right before I leave, I hit that button again, it syncs up all my podcasts again, you know, so I don't really find myself needing to download back to the computer, but I don't have the ability right now. If they opened up the SDK a little bit more, we could do that.
Yeah, or maybe you can do it over Wi-Fi. But it sounds like a good solution for people who don't necessarily, they aren't near a Wi-Fi connection throughout the day, or, you know, at a point where they say, hey, I want to grab another podcast, maybe for someone who does a lot of traveling and they want to get something new. You know, something long form like this show would never work over the 3G connection, because I think it's a 10 megabyte limit, right?
It is.
Yep. So very cool. So I guess some of the concerns with, you know, we were trying to figure out why the Podcaster app was initially rejected from the App Store. We thought maybe it was a bandwidth issue. Clearly, that's not a problem anymore. And of course, we see that with applications like Last.fm and Pandora, where you're constantly downloading stuff. So,
right. And ultimately, podcast RSS player is meant so that you don't have to stream at all. You know, a lot of the users that I have are iPod Touch users. And when they go out, they don't have any connectivity at all. So they have to be able to use this stuff.
Okay, so can you explain that more? Like why an iPod Touch user would want this application? Because they're obviously already, I mean, if they're on the internet at all, they're doing it with Wi-Fi. Why would they want to do RSS player over the iTunes application?
Well, once again, you could just, you know, you could sync up wirelessly. A lot of people don't sync their devices with their computers at all. You know, the two people that I work with, they don't sync their phones at all, so it would be nice for them to have it. I don't sync my phone with my computer at all anymore. You know, I put my music on it. The people on the iPod Touch, they could, you know, when they're traveling, when they're out, anytime you hit a Wi-Fi network, just refresh your podcasts and you've got them all on there.
Gotcha. So it's a really nice, it replaces using the podcasts directory.
It has for me.
Yeah.
Well, not for finding them, because basically that's why I still like to find them. I still browse that directory a lot. The iTunes store is great.
Excellent. Okay, so that is available for $2 in the App Store. It's RSS Player. And check that out if you're interested in it.
If I can say, Alex did a fantastic job with this. I love it when I'm out and about and somebody tells me about a show that I haven't heard of. It's a perfect way to just grab it, you know, and not worry about whether it's going to be too big or not for the iPhones store. So, you know, it's great to just have on the go. I love it. That wasn't a commercial, by the way.
Cool. Thanks.
Yep.
All right. So I can take a hint. Apparently I need to go download RSS Player.
Yeah, yes, Jeff. Definitely go check it out.
What has to do?
What's that?
I said, if you listen to podcasts, you definitely need to have that app.
Definitely.
All right, now I have my homework. I'll go get RSS Player.
Awesome. Okay, so moving on to this week's news. Apple finally puts an end to emoji enablers. So we got an email from an application developer. Let me see. I can't remember which. I think it was Typing Genius, or Miscalculator, I should say. Got an email from the developer of Miscalculator, and he put an emoji enabler into his application. And if you don't know what emoji is, it's essentially, it's Japanese emoticons, and that's something that we've talked about before, and they're just basically, you know, smiley faces and, you know, poop with smiley faces and, you know, flowers and phones and all this crazy stuff that you can insert into text messages and email and all that stuff. But the thing is, Apple only enabled it in Japan, so it's been a big thing to hack on in countries other than Japan to get the emoji icons, because they are already in the phone. So developers figured out at some point how to enable it just simply with their application. So there was no actual hacking required. So now Apple has essentially told the developers, you know, you can't do this anymore. If you have an emoji enabler in your application, it's going to be immediately rejected. And for those who are in the App Store with applications that do, you know, other things such as Typing Genius, you know, it's for learning to type quicker on the iPhone. They're telling those developers to remove emoji enablers immediately, submit a new version without the emoji in it. And for those that just simply enable emoji, those have been removed from the App Store. So we don't have Adam on, and he was the big proponent of the emoji, at least initially. Jeff or Callie or Alex, do you guys use the emoji?
You know, I use emoji every now and then, although I backed off after what I thought was an incredibly funny emoji joke turned out to be me not understanding what some of the symbols were.
I do remember that.
So I thought it was really funny. This is a move to help people not get into those kind of situations, or I can't really understand the reasoning behind it unless, and Alex, you may be able to answer this. Does the enabler cause the app to use more processing power? I mean, like what is the point?
Yeah. There's nothing technical. I don't think there's nothing technical that they're keeping it out for, but I mean, honestly,
it's just another keyboard.
Yeah, and it just, as far as I know, it just kind of adds an entry to a P list and flips a switch to yes, and, you know, there it goes. So, and it doesn't even enable it. So if you're someone who, you know, grabbed Typing Genius and you don't have any desire to turn on emoji doesn't turn on by itself. You actually have to go in. Once you've enabled the ability to turn on emoji, you have to go into the keyboard settings and explicitly say, I would like emoji. And so you can turn it off at any time as well.
You first have to know what emoji is. And then it seems like people would be able to control themselves with it. But I don't understand why.
So have you enabled emoji on your phone, Callie?
No, I haven't. I did for a while, several months back. Well, not several months back. This has been, I've lost all track of time. My life is too busy. I have used it in the past, but I don't use it anymore just because I don't find the need for it.
I just stick with the good old smiley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that works best. Unless you want to be, you know, goofy and send the poop with smiley faces. That's the only thing I ever get entertained by, I've tried once or twice with friends to create entire sentences with just, like, you know, the minimum amount of actual English words and just a bunch of emoji. So I mean, but that takes too much time. Obviously it's not a time saver, and you can't see it on any other device but an iPhone, so it's pretty limited. And I guess the question is, why did they care at all? You know, I can understand, hey, not enabling it by default. Maybe it just shows that, maybe it's just an image thing for Apple. Maybe they look at this and say, well, you know, we did this for a reason. We don't want them to have it on there, and we don't want it to look like developers are going behind our backs and enabling this against, you know, what we want to have happen. And that's really what it is. So it's interesting to see. Jeff, what do you think?
I cannot come up with a single good reason for not letting people enable emoji outside of Japan. I'm completely at a loss. The only thing I can come up with is that for whatever reason, Apple doesn't trust people outside Japan to know how to properly use emoji. And of course, I'm a perfect example because I completely blew it when I tried to do an emoji joke. But I mean, seriously, I cannot come up with any good reason not to let people enable emoji.
But why would that be their choice? You know what I'm saying? Like if what that's what you're saying, then why would that be their decision to make that call?
I agree. I can't come up with a good reason why Apple is doing this. And Michael, what you said is probably, even though it sounds like a stretch to me, it's probably the most plausible thing I've heard so far, you know, saying that Apple is doing this essentially to let developers know that they need to stick within certain guidelines. And if they step out of those boundaries, then Apple will stop them from doing whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first clear case where I can see that, you know, developers have done something that Apple doesn't like. And, you know, Apple has said, you know, don't do this. And it's actually, you know, blatantly developers going behind Apple's back and doing something that they, I mean, for whatever reason, who knows, they don't want to have happen, which is, you know, enabling the emoji. So you know, that is the only thing that I can come up with, frankly. So I'm not sure how much longer. I know Typing Genius had still has the emoji on, at least they had it on when I wrote the article. Version 1.1.1 still has the emoji enabler, and it seems to still be up on the store right now for 99 cents. So get it while you can. When it switches over to 1.1.2, it will not have the enabler in there. If you do update to 1.1.2 and you already have it enabled, it won't disable the emoji. So really, once you enable emoji, you're good. You can even restore your phone as long as you do a backup and then restore from that backup, because it just, you know, it's a preference thing. So as long as you keep your user folder, I guess it would be, backed up and available to you, then emoji should still work, unless Apple, you know, changes the way that works, which I'm sure they're planning on doing soon. So with that, we want to talk about, do we want to talk about these id games? I guess for a while it's been, you know, hey, let's enable it. Let's get Quake or Doom. I guess it was Doom. They wanted to get Doom on the iPhone back in the jailbreak days, when it was still pretty raw and having applications being created by third parties who weren't really authorized by Apple. John Carmack of id said that he is, they're working on getting a few of their classic games onto the iPhone. Wolfenstein, Quake 3, and Doom are all coming to the iPhone at some point. Big news, who cares? For gamers, I guess.
For gamers, it's going to be huge.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting, and I have to say that when the iPhone 3G first came out and the App Store was brand new and fresh, there were a few obvious applications that looked fantastic, and most of those were big names such as Sega and, you know, Icon Factory and AOL, with, you know, the games that we all, you know, initially checked out, like Super Monkey Ball and all of that. But outside of those really kind of big name developers, there was a lot of junk. It really truly depressed me, because looking at all these applications, seeing these terrible, terrible apps and kind of feeling forced to look at them and review them and say, you know, this sucks. It was really depressing for me. And now, in the last, like, I would say month or two, there's some really great applications coming out, really great games. And you can see just how incredibly powerful the iPhone is as a gaming platform. And I really wish Arnold Kim could have joined us today. He's busy, but, you know, Arnold Kim of Touch Arcade, I just kind of realized he's really in a great focus for the iPhone, because it's incredible what you can do with this device as far as gaming. So it's exciting to see all this stuff. You know, I've seen stuff from, you know, I can't say, so I won't even speak it. But there's some cool stuff coming soon. And, you know, just tons and tons of cool games. Great games. You guys been messing with games at all? Callie or Jeff?
The occasional here and there game. But, I mean, they not real games like, you know, Quake or Doom. Not that there are any yet. But from the very beginning, when I saw... what was it? Texas Hold'em. You know, with the graphics and everything, I knew immediately that stuff like this would be able to come out in the future. But Of course, it's a brand new thing. Of course, it took a while and there was a lot of crap coming out just to get it out there or just for people to see what they could do. And I don't mind that one bit. I don't mind people just trying things. Yeah, it makes it a little hard to kind of filter through, but that's what reviewers are for. And that's what sites are for, to help guide people. But obviously this stuff was going to come. It was just a matter of time.
Yeah.
I don't know how good, you know, how are the controls going to be for a game? Like, do my, you know, I don't see not having physical controllers being too much fun playing a game like Doom on the iPhone.
I think they could come up with something pretty ingenious to let you control the game from, you know, just obviously a touchscreen standpoint. It is id after all. So they may be the guys to pioneer porting those kind of classic games that really require controls into something that works out. So I mean, I don't think they're going to put something out that is really difficult to use or strange, and I think they're going to have something cool. So I think we're going to see some surprises from those releases when they come out.
Are you concerned your fingers are going to get in the way, kind of thing, or something else?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, I had my iPhone jailbroken for a while and I had Doom installed on it, but you know, just having the regular game just ported over to the iPhone was pretty unplayable for me. So I'm sure it's not going to be exactly like that, but I just hope they have good controls for it.
You know, I'm looking forward to seeing what id does when they release these games, because I, like Michael, I'm expecting to see some type of innovative interface for playing the games, which I expect other companies will then start copying. And so then we'll see id raising the bar for iPhone and iPod Touch gaming. And I think that'll be a cool thing all the way around. So id better not let me down.
I don't think they will. I think we're going to see something fun. And along that front, Hysteria Project was unveiled, I think, last week. And it was one of those things. It was a YouTube video was passed around, a few YouTube videos actually, just kind of little teaser videos for this game that no one really knew what it was about. It just kind of looked really scary because it was just a menacing, shadowy figure with, I think it was an axe, was the icon for this game. And so finally, I believe the game has been released. I'm not sure. I can check in iTunes as I'm talking. But I've had a chance to play it. It was submitted to the App Store, so it should be there at this point. Of course, I'm not seeing it. So it has been submitted to the App Store. But Hysteria Project is a game where it's, you know, remember when you were a kid and you had those books where it was, you know, you turn the page and it says, you know, something happens, and you know, now you have to make a choice. Do you run into the forest or do you, you know, keep hiding in this corner or something like that? And you choose which one, and it says, okay, go to page 7, and then you go to the page that corresponds with what you did, and the story kind of keeps unfolding.
Choose your own adventure books.
Exactly. There you go. So it's a choose your own adventure game, and it's very interesting. It's essentially a horror film that you're kind of living
and creating. But there's not in this particular format, but there have been stories like this in different formats for years, but they've never caught on. So I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical.
Have you tried it?
I've tried it. Well, funny story. My dad actually was working on one before he passed away. It wasn't exactly the same thing, but he actually had bigger plans for it. But I tried it in that kind of sense. But
you haven't actually tried Hysteria Project, though.
I haven't tried Hysteria. No. But just the idea that's been around for so long.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I've never, you know, seen it catch on. So I don't know. Do you really think that it'll be a big thing?
Honestly, I do. Because the developers behind this, I think they worked for, I can't remember which company, but they were all kind of let go when the company decided to get rid of the mobile division or downsize. I may be getting the story wrong, but the point is there are a bunch of very talented people. And what they did was take a whole bunch of live action stuff that they filmed. So this is all real stuff that was filmed. There's no animation whatsoever. in this. And so it looks very real and very eerie. And, you know, they say put on headphones for the best experience. And, you know, with, you know, horror films, the half of the, you know, half of the fun with it is the noise, all the audio, because it really, you know, it can really jar you, when something crazy happens in there. So you listen to the stuff with your headphones on, and, you know, if you want to, you can turn off the lights, and it's actually better to turn off the lights because it's a very dark lit game, so you can see it better. And of course, you know, I got a little creeped out as I was playing this, but it was very engaging, I thought. And it's not only just, you know, pick this and pick this and, you know, keep going and you watch what happens, and then you actually have to do things within the game. So, you know, if you say you're in the forest and, you know, I want to find another hiding spot, let's creep over to the other hiding spot, you actually have to, as you're walking through, you have to keep you know, touching the screen in specific spots to move the branches out of the way. And if you don't do it correctly, then, you know, it'll, I guess, hit you in the face and the killer will find you and, you know, whatever. It's really interesting. And I guess the way they have it set up is it's an episodic type thing. And I'm not sure if they're going to keep, because it's $1.99 when it does hit the store, it'll be $1.99. I'm not sure if you're going to have to keep paying $2 each time a new chapter to this comes out. But I was very impressed with it. It was very well done, and, you know, they certainly took a lot of time with it, because the teaser videos were coming out, you know, quite a few months ago. So they've been working on it for a long time, and it turned out very well. So it's $1.99 when it does come out, and I enjoyed it.
I have my hopes for it. I mean, I think it depends on how you approach it. It seems like they're approaching it more from a game standpoint than just a pure entertainment standpoint. And I think that's been the problem with, like, movies. So movie, you want to sit down and relax and enjoy yourself and not have to do any work, right? And I think that's probably where the big problem was with a movie, having to choose your plot, is that, yeah, it's entertainment rather than a game. So if it's really truly coming from a game standpoint, and that's what you sit down with the intention to do, then I think it could work.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
They came up with a really clever way to actually do things within the live action stuff. So if you don't do something correctly, it, you know, you fail and you get killed. And they, you know, they actually somehow got transitions in there. So, you know, from within the live action, it'll, you know, the story changes immediately, and, you know, whatever happens. So for example, you find something, you know, you see something in the grass as you're running through the forest, and you can pick it up if you want to, but you don't have to pick it up. But if you do pick it up, you see, oh, okay, this is a clue to figure out how to get out of this maze of a forest. And if you realize that that's what it is, you can figure out which direction to go. Every time it asks you, which direction do you want to go? And if you, you know, do it wrong and you take too much time, and actually for some of the decisions, you know, you're running through the forest and the killer's right behind you, it says, you know, go left or right. And you have 5 seconds to choose left or right. And so, and if you don't choose quick enough, obviously, as if you were really living this out, you would just be killed because you're just standing there. So you're absolutely right, Callie. They went from, you know, a game standpoint, making this into a game instead of just a pure entertainment thing. So it'll be interesting to see how everyone responds to it once it does get released to the store, because I enjoyed it.
Definitely.
So, but it'll also be interesting to see how they do do further chapters. Because I can see a lot of people getting upset if you have to pay $2 every time you want to do this. So who knows? But there are a bunch of whiny babies on the App Store. You know, this.
Jeez, you think?
This app sucks. It's $2. It's not worth $2. You know. So, but we won't get into that. So moving on. Do we want to talk about GPS? Jeff, you like the GPS stuff.
So, I'm all about GPS.
All about the GPS. So at Mobile World Congress, there was a lot of GPS talk with the iPhone. I think there were at least one or two different turn-by-turn GPS applications being displayed. Just one application. Sigic demonstrated a full-featured turn-by-turn GPS application for the iPhone. And they're planning to submit it to the App Store despite, you know, the SDK saying, no, you can't, you know, do turn by turn directions. So we'll see if that gets in there. But it was great to see, you know, that the iPhone can actually do this quite well. I don't believe it had any sort of audio cues in it at that point, but supposedly also there are turn-by-turn GPS applications already in the store. We kind of figured this out. We all, you know, all the blogs figured this out after that story broke. It's called, it's X-Road Co.'s GPS map US West and US East. They both have those in the App Store. They've been in there since October.
And that one has audio, correct?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But there's got to be something about them that they're, you know, how did these apps get into the App Store when they say clearly that there's no navigation? There must be something missing about them, I would think.
Yeah. Well, there are no voice prompts, but I don't know if that really matters at all.
I should
check that matters. I mean, that's ultimately what we want in a GPS device and what we want on our iPhones to turn it into a GPS device.
It's certainly an improvement because right now we do have to step through all that. And, you know, just having something that, you know, continuously progresses. And if you mess up and it'll, you know, just recalculate, that'd be fantastic because, you know, there have been many times where I miss my turn and, you know, then I have to kind of figure it out. I either have to figure it out or pull over and, you know. You know, reset.
Is that because you can't follow directions, Michael?
I need to be careful how I answer that question. But
hey, Michael, the right answer is actually the road that I needed to exit on was under construction, so I had
there
to reroute.
Go.
Yeah, actually that did happen once. So yeah, East State here is under construction, but whatever. Moving on. Yeah, so it doesn't have any voice cues in there right now, and that would be the ultimate goal. And I gotta wonder, Jeff, is there only one GPS antenna in the iPhone? Do you remember?
I don't know how many GPS antennas the iPhone actually has. I'm assuming, because it tends to be fairly accurate, that it probably has three antennas. Because once you have three antennas, you can do fairly accurate triangulation.
But it'll still take a couple minutes.
Or a couple seconds. Depends on where you are and how many satellites you can hit. So, you know, if they're doing it with just a single antenna, then it can be pretty tough to keep an accurate measurement on your location, especially if you're moving.
Right. And it is a GPS, so assisted GPS. So it does use the Wi-Fi portion to kind of get you centered quicker. Now, does with AGPS, is it just simply using, okay, you're in this kind of area, and then it shrinks it down based on, you know, because it does the cell tower thing first, right? And then it does the Wi-Fi if it can to kind of shrink it down even further. And then, of course, it does the GPS. Do you know if the GPS portion is supplemented by Wi-Fi or cell towers past that point?
I would assume it's referencing as much data as it can get at any given time.
That's true. It probably depends because as a developer, you could actually set how far you want to look in. So, I mean, if I say I want to look in 1 mile, it might not even need GPS, you know, for that. So we'll never go down to that level. So it depends how the developer uses it too.
Right. So I guess my concern is because I'm sure we have all had this issue where the little blue ball just kind of just has no idea where it is and just kind of ends up somewhere that it can't possibly be. And I've never used a full blown GPS unit for my car or anything like that. But I assume that those have many, many GPS antennas and they're much more accurate. So, I guess it would just simply be, hey, this is an iPhone. It's as accurate as it gets.
I think there's a software bug.
You think there's a software bug?
Yeah, because when you have that thing happen where your blue dot ends up in the middle of a lake that's 10 miles away, that is not the GPS data doing that. That's got to be the software in the iPhone. Because even if you have a single antenna and you can't get good acquisition to, you know, to let that single antenna try and triangulate if you're standing still, you still end up in a lake. No way. even with a single antenna, you can still get within a reasonable area. I mean, close enough that where the GPS says you are, if you look around, you can go, oh, yeah, I recognize the area that the GPS says I'm in.
Right.
But
yeah, that makes
way
sense.
Off like that, no, that's got to be a software thing.
Makes sense. Okay, so let's talk about the there's a really neat concept video on managing applications on your home screen through iTunes. Basically, it's just, you know, it shows layouts of what your phone would look like, and you can drag applications around and reorganize them and add pages and do all that fun stuff that is just such a pain to do on the iPhone. And this is all done through iTunes, and of course, then you'd sync that back, and then ta-da. And this is a concept video. I think we really need it. Of course, I threw up a tip on iPhone Alley a while ago on, you know, instead of just having to drag an application through and mess up all your organization for applications before the spot that you actually want to put it in, you can actually utilize the dock portion at the bottom as a little temporary holder place to kind of move stuff around. But I still think we need it.
Absolutely. We've all been asking for this since day one, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Since as soon as we got the App Store, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm being bad with, or incredibly clever, depending on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. I actually have apps on my iPhone that I never use, but they're there so they can be placeholders so that the other apps will be where I want them.
Uh-huh. So you actually have, you know, you fill up your entire first screen with something.
Yeah, so I actually have throwaway apps that are just sitting there taking up space.
Hmm, interesting.
And it works.
Is that so that they don't, so something doesn't pop on the home screen that you don't want it to be?
Yeah, well, see, I use different screens for different types of applications. So like the front screen has the apps that I use every single day. The second screen has other business-related applications and travel applications that I use on a very regular basis. Then when you get to the third screen, then I have games, and the fourth screen, games. And then the fifth and sixth screen have other applications that I'm testing at any given time. And since the different applications that I might be using at any given time, I like to have the applications I use most often at the left edge of the screen because I'm left-handed. So to make sure that I always have those applications where I want them, occasionally I have to throw in another app so that it pushes everything else around so that I can keep the specific apps that I want sitting exactly where I want them. So I actually use the screens not so much as rows, but as columns.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, so we need that. Definitely.
Yeah, this whole concept thing would be fantastic for me because it would make it so much easier for me to organize my apps.
Yeah, it sounds like you put a lot of thought into it.
I clearly need help. I spend way too much time thinking about how to organize apps on my iPhone.
Well, ultimately, you don't organize apps all the time. I mean, just once and they're set. I mean, personally for me, I don't organize them ever. I just set them one time and that's the way they are, you know?
Right. And the only time that changes is if one of the applications that I use all the time is going to be replaced with something that's come out that I think is better than what I was using. And so then it becomes a pain because that new application might show up on screen 4 or screen 5, but I want it on screen 2. And then to put it back where I want it, excuse me, everything else is going to get shuffled around. And it would be much easier just to be able to bring up all the screens in iTunes, put everything where I want it, and call it good.
Cool. You know, for those spacers, you could probably just go to like a Flickr picture and do a add to home screen, you know, icon. And instead of having apps that you don't use, you could have pictures from your Flickr album taking up the space.
I love it. Okay.
That's
great.
A good idea.
Now, great idea.
Now I'm going to reorganize everything again and exactly what you just said.
And then you can post pictures of your home screen layouts to Flickr and then use those pictures.
You know, I
can
even placeholders. Put pictures up on Flickr that are other icons or identifying things so that I can actually break out where applications are and have visual cues. look what you've just started.
I hope
you're satisfied with yourself. I'm going to spend all week now creating graphics and organizing stuff on my iPhone again. Oh, man.
Sorry. It would be easier if we had this program, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
It would.
Okay, so one last note before we move on to our picks. We've gotten a couple emails from listeners who say, hey, you should talk about getting AppleCare for your iPhone 3G because, you know, July is coming up in a couple months, of course, when maybe many of us have gotten our iPhone 3Gs or, you know, in general, whenever you buy an Apple product, you have a year to buy AppleCare on it to extend that AppleCare. So whenever you bought your iPhone, you have a year from that point. So it's a good idea to check out AppleCare. So if at some point your iPhone just kind of stops working, you can bring it in the Apple Store and just have a genius swap it out immediately. It's a really good thing to have, as long as you haven't really, if you don't drop it and shatter the glass or, you know, stick it in a bunch of soup and, you know, have it stop working. As long as there's no water or physical damage.
You can't stir soup with an iPhone?
No.
Oops.
You downloaded the Spoon app.
Yeah. I had Urban Spoon. I assumed it was, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, outside of, physical damage to the phone, AppleCare is a really great investment. And Jeff, I think you could get behind that, right?
Oh yeah. I'm a strong proponent of AppleCare, not just for your iPhone, but especially if you have a Mac laptop, it can be an incredible lifesaver there. If the first time you have a problem with your display, AppleCare it pays for itself right there. And with an iPhone, the first time something goes wrong enough that your iPhone needs to be repaired or replaced and you walk in and they go, here's your new iPhone, and you're out the door, your time is worth a lot of money.
It's a beautiful thing when you get when you just kind of go in there and say, hey, it's not working, and he just says, okay, here's another one.
Right. I mean, that's worth the price of AppleCare right there.
Yeah. $70. You can get that for one year, from the time you purchased it. So what that actually gives you, it extends it to another year of hardware support. You have 90 days of phone support when you initially buy your phone, and then that will extend it out to 2 years. So you'll have a total of 2 years of support for your iPhone. So it's a great thing to do. I may or may not be getting AppleCare on mine because, well, I may be getting a new iPhone if one comes out. Hmm. Well, when one comes out, I should say. Because I'm sure they're planning more iPhones, as we've discussed on the phone or on the podcast. Hello. So let's before we get to our picks, we have a sponsor for this episode of the iPhone LA podcast, and that sponsor is Audible. And I absolutely love Audible. They have over 50,000 titles, and they're professionally read, fantastic books, fiction, nonfiction. Any genre you can think of, you know, they have the Harry Potter books. They have, you know, oh my gosh, Audible. Jeff,
one of the great things about Audible, when you're listening to a book that they have, yes, since they're professionally performed, it's not a Kindle 2. It sounds really good.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. And they actually just, this is something that I really enjoyed seeing. They added an enhanced version of the audio. So normally it's a fairly small file for, you know, it's very compressed because it's voice. You can do a lot of compression with it, but they added an enhanced version. So they've doubled the quality. It sounds much, much better. And Audible's great. If you like listening to podcasts, Audible is perfect. So if you don't have time to read, or maybe you're in the car and you want to get some reading done, listening to a book is fantastic. If you already listen to podcasts, you know how to listen to an audiobook. It may be a little foreign when you first start, but you'll really get used to it. And it's great for books like John Hodgman's book, the one book that he did with Jonathan Colton. What was that book? Areas of My Expertise.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And you can even, I mean, if you even read the book in its actual book form, it's great to go to the Audible version and listen to that, because it's John Hodgman reading his own book, and it's accompanied by Jonathan Colton. And actually, at the end of it, he reads the list of 700 hobo nicknames in its entirety. I talked to Jonathan Colton about this because he accompanied him while he read this, and they did it in one take, and it was incredibly long and incredibly funny. So Audible is great for all that kind of stuff. They also do free stuff. They do speeches and really interesting things. One of the books that I am currently reading on Audible, it's fantastic. Embracing the Wide Sky by Daniel Tammet. He's an autistic savant who you may have seen him on a Discovery Channel. He is known for reciting, but from memory, the most pi, I should say. You know, he recited pi furthest from memory. And because he can see numbers in interesting ways. And so I guess the book is about the human mind and how it works and how it, handles certain information, and even cooler, how it relates to the autistic mind, and how, because it seems to, if you've ever seen Rain Man, you can see that, it seems as though, they have magic powers. They can figure out, how numbers work. And it's really, he talks about how regular minds who, that aren't autistic can think in the same sort of way if you kind of train yourself and you look at, you really think about how you think. So it's a very cool book, Embracing the Wide Sky by Daniel Tammet, and that is one Audible credit, and you can get that for free if you're a new Audible customer by using the special link audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. You can get a free free credit to an audiobook. And so thank you to Audible for sponsoring the show. And with that, let's talk about our iPhone picks. Jeff, do you have one for us this week?
I do. And I'm going totally highbrow this week. Actually, no, I'm not. Zombie Attack. I'm going with a game this week, Zombie Attack. And it's a fun little game where, the objective is to save or protect your shack from the hordes of zombies, and you have to build weapons. And the more zombies that you kill, the more money you accumulate, and then you can buy better weapons and keep the zombies from destroying your shack. And it's a wonderfully fun little game. So it uses touch interface, so you can put down your weapons wherever you want them, and then it uses the accelerometer to move you around the field that the zombies are coming into. And there's just something special about setting up a swinging axe so that as the zombies come in through the fence, they start getting chopped apart. And so there's zombies squirting their cartoon blood out as they stagger around, only to get shot by a machine gun on a turret. I mean, that's family fun right there.
This looks fantastic, yeah. Yeah, and I should say, obviously many nerds enjoy zombies, and I'm one of them. Zombies are good.
This is just good, clean, cartoon zombie death fun.
Yeah. $2.99 in the App Store, Zombie Attack. There's a free version, right?
Yeah, there's a free version that limits you to, I think, to the machine guns.
Okay.
So you don't have as wide a selection of weapons in the free version.
So it's kind of a tower defense with zombies.
Yeah.
Cool.
Boys.
not a fan of the zombies.
No,
Colin?
I'm just teasing. Actually, I am a fan of zombies, unfortunately.
Yeah, that looks great. I'm going to check that out. Callie, do you have an iPhone pick this week?
I tried. I have had no luck with any of the apps that I've been trying lately. I really wanted to be able to recommend the TV. .com app, but it just doesn't work. I mean, it works. My frustration with it and the site is that you can't find and play full length episodes. It's really all about clips. I mean, you can, but it really takes a lot of work. So I wanted to recommend that. I can't. So everything that I've tried in the past week or so really hasn't been good for me. So I'm on a bad streak right now. So I'm going to go back to my earlier recommendation and say RSS player. You already heard all about that, though.
Yeah. Awesome. Excellent. Yeah, it's again, $199 RSS player.
Yeah, that's a great pick.
I figured it's fitting. Do you guys find that you get on streaks where it's just like nothing is a rock in your world?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And lately, thankfully, I've found quite a few applications that restore a sense of childlike wonder in my life, as fake Steve Jobs would put it.
Well, so. I need to play with what you're playing with then.
Yeah. Well, I'll get to that right after Alex does his pick.
Well, my pick is the USA Today app. I just really like it because they really laid it out like a newspaper. I really feel like I'm reading a newspaper when I open up this app. The difference between, you know, I have Google Reader for reading RSS feeds, but I like the USA Today app because it kind of shows you everything. You know, it gives you a good generalization of what's going on. And it's really good. It doesn't crash. You know, the interface is real slick. It's a good app. It's free.
It looks great. I haven't checked that out yet. So it's USA Today, and looks great. Awesome pick. So my pick is a game this week. It's called Jabbeh, J-A-B-E-H, and it is a puzzle game. And it's absolutely gorgeous. That was the first thing that drew me to it. It consists of trying to figure out where marbles should be placed on a grid. And there are various hints that are given to you to determine where conclusively the marbles are. So you don't actually have to guess at all. If you guess, you're probably going to guess wrong. So it consists of the grid showing you, you know, how many marbles will be in each row and column. And there are also arrows that point in the direction of various marbles. And so you say, you know, it's essentially Minesweeper with, you know, a little twist on it. And it's incredibly addicting. It's really tough for me to describe it without it sounding like an incredibly nerdy, you know, you have to be into math game, kind of game. But it's a lot of fun. It's $5. There's actually a free version that you can try out to see how addicted you get to Jabbeh. And so it's Jabbeh Lite. You can check that out. And it's just an incredibly, incredibly well done application. I can't say enough how much I enjoy the visuals in this game. And I can say for sure, this is one of the applications that has restored a sense of childlike wonder in my life. Playing it on the iPhone. So it's J-A-B-E-H, Jabbeh, and check it out. It's a lot of fun. And with that, we are done with that stuff. So I should say, check out, I guess we're not doing the iPhone Alley Burn Ball Tribe. I think that's over. I may be completely wrong, but who knows? So if it's not, check out the Burn Ball Tribe. You can go to on the homepage. We have a nice little link up in the images that rotate through on the homepage, so you can join that and help defend the world from evil robots, and you know, help us win some promo codes for people who want to play. And of course, go to iPhoneAlley.com for more news, tips, and reviews every day. And if you have a tip that you'd like to share, you can hit the contact us link on the side of the page. Or if you want a product or an application reviewed, hit that link and let us know. And, of course, you can check out our iPhone picks and the show notes at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can contact us at podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And once again, Mr. Jeff Gamet joins us from the Mac Observer at MacObserver.com, iPod Observer, iPodObserver.com. And, of course, you can check him out on Twitter and all of his antics at Twitter.com/JGamet. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Thanks for having me on. It's always fun.
Always great having you. And of course, Callie Lewis from geekbrief.tv and Callie, twitter.com/Callie Lewis, right?
Correct.
Thank you so much for being here, Callie. It's great having you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And of course, Alex Sekoransky of RSS Player / Podcaster. You can check out the site for that, rssplayer.blogspot.com. And of course, RSS Player. It's $1.99. It's Callie Lewis's pick this week. Check it out. And of course, my Twitter is twitter.com/ Michael Johnston. And with that, another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is in the can.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this? With a stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do?
Oh, a stylus, right?